This is an interview with Governor Victor Atiyeh at his office in downtown Portland, Oregon. The interviewer for the Oregon Historical Society is Clark Hansen. The date is September 3rd, 1993, and this is tape 58, side 2. You were just mentioning that the wagon train for the sesquicentennial of the Oregon Trail is ending in Oregon City on this Labor Day, and you're going to be participating in that.
Yeah, they invited the folks from time to time to join up and write a segment, and my opportunity really is the last one. And, you know, I almost feel like, I think it was Robert Kennedy who climbed Mount McKinley but took a helicopter to within 800 feet of the top, and then climbed it. So everybody else worked real hard and did a fine job, and I just kind of jump on at the end. But I think it's a marvelous thing that's happened, initiated and worked very, very hard from the Oregon side. A lot of states participated, but I think the point was Oregon. Credit a great deal to Jill Thorne. Anyway, I'll go down to Clackamas Park, and then we'll go up to the school, and apparently we'll ride from the school to back down to Clackamas Park. And they want authentic costume. And I think I'll dress up a little bit.
What do you have for an authentic costume?
Well, you know, I might wear my vest, warmer, but probably even more authentic. It's a very fine, it's hard for me to describe it. Cape is not the right word, as sleeves. Hmm. But I was up at Umatilla one time, and admired this young man. His name is Lavador. He does L-A-V-A-D-O-U-R. He's a fine artist, Indian. And it's red, like a red blanket, beaded down the sleeves, long rawhide,
strands,
fringe. And, very handsome piece. But it's warm. But I may wear it anyway, because it's really very attractive. I think I'll do that.
Is that designed as a Native American design or a pioneer design?
No, that'd be more Native American. Uh-huh. But, you know, they wear all kinds of things whenever they get their hands on. So
right.
It isn't really a buckskin thing that a pioneer might have worn. But, you know, as we say, it's close enough for government work.
Yeah.
Anyway, I kind of look forward to doing that.
Well, speaking of government work, you were wrapping up on your governorship last time, and you were talking about a set of principles and common sense, and I believe that you wanted to carry that on a little further.
Well, unless you have some, you know, further questions to ask, I do have what I'd call a wrap-up.
Well, I do have some other things on in terms of activity since then. Should I go ahead with that?
You mean into the business?
Business and some of the ballot measures and things like that.
We're about to leave office, is that what you're saying?
Yes, we're at the end of your office.
Okay, now it's time for me.
Okay.
You know, I've thought a lot about this all during the course of our interview. As I had told you much earlier, I never really kept inventory. There were things to be done, and I did them. And then I didn't, you know, jot on the side, well, this is what I've done. Or even, you know, even a definition of what I'd said, I think probably the first tape, that you go into office with a set of principles and common sense. But it kind of confirmed my mind, because I've never really put it together in my mind. As I was answering your questions, everything seemed to fit the pattern of what I had said then.
Mm-hmm.
Not that I didn't believe it with what I was doing, but it kind of confirmed in my own mind that from day one, that remained unchanged. Oftentimes people talk about pressure. Gosh, don't you feel pressure, and particularly when it becomes to something quite controversial. They never did.
Hmm.
You know, I think you put pressure on yourself. That would mean that you're less certain of what you're doing. That's how you finally come to it. Or you're thinking in terms of, gosh, where are the votes? You know, if I vote this way, are there more people on this side than on that side? That's where the pressure comes. That's what they worry about. I'll lose my seat. Those are all external things that apply the pressure to someone. I never had that sense. I believed very much in the system. I think I told you when I lost in 1974, I wasn't depressed. I didn't want to lose, obviously. No one wants to lose. But, you know, I didn't feel that there was some massive rejection and all the rest of it. I just figured, well, I just didn't do a good enough job. And of course, who knows how many votes the pardon for Nixon cost me. I don't know the answer to that. Never will, of course. But, that's the system. People don't want you right now. So I went back to the rug business. And so I never felt pressure. I would think about things. The Soros test, and that actually is a selected word, Soros, when we were cutting budgets and we had it very precisely and you had to use your entire mind, the whole mind, which incidentally is an exciting thing to do. We don't do that very often. And working in close conjunction with some very, very bright people in state government, but still making those kinds of decisions that you really prefer not to make, but you're going to make them anyway, I had something happen that had never happened before to me, before or since. I'd go home at night, my body was sore, as if somebody had been beating on me. Well, obviously, nobody had been beating on me. In spite of all of that, okay, you know, what's our principle? For example, let's talk about welfare for a minute. I believe that most people don't want to be on welfare. I believe that the state is there to help them through their problem. With the operating word, through. And that's to help them, not help the state, to help them. I believe that if we don't do that, we rob them of pride and self-esteem, which is a terrible thing to take for any human. And so in the process, you apply that. When you start dealing with, okay, we have to cut back on welfare, you know, but what can we do? For example, we had in place, even from that day when we spoke of in the tape, we were going to cut out the two-parent family. We prepared to find them jobs. We really would work hard at that. When someone applied for welfare, they would not automatically go on welfare. For about a month, we'd give them emergency assistance and work real hard to get them jobs, which is what they wanted anyway. And we were successful. So, okay, we cut the budget, but we did it in a positive way. We didn't just cut them out of it. We did it in a positive way. And so when you operate them to theory, they don't want to be on welfare, you have to help them through it, you have to help them get out of it. And sometimes you have to maybe apply some regulations that would maybe, I say, force them out. And I don't mean force them out against their will.
Give them incentives.
Incentive. And a great story, Keith Putnam. Was a, we call it Adult Family Services, welfare of state government in the Department of Human Resources. He told a story, which I've told many times. The story was a little green frog. And this little green frog was hopping down the road, and all of a sudden he looked down at this deep rut in the road, and there was his friend, that other little green frog down in the rut. Oh, he said, you better get out of there. I mean, that's a dangerous place. The frog down in there said, I've been trying real hard, but I can't get out. And this friend up on the top said, I can't really help you. I just wish you the best. So he hopped away. Next day, that little green frog's hopping down the road. He sees his friend, now out of the rut. Oh, I said, you got out. How'd you get out? He said, a wagon came by and I had to. Now, you see, there was a major impetus to get out. And so as you deal with it, you think about pressure and you think about what needs to be done. And throughout the whole experience, I slept every night. I didn't lay awake night tossing and turning. I would think about what needed to be done. I'd get very good advice from those whom I depended upon. We were all generally on the same wavelength. And so we just went about doing the job that needed to be done. And I thought back on it. 35 years full-time in business. Prior to that, working, part-time, summers, in a way. But then 35 years full-time. 20 years in the Oregon legislature. And the thought occurred to me, there's a lot of people that would like to or want to be governor. But how many of them are prepared to be governor? Not too many.
What does it mean to be prepared for governor, being governor?
Just what I said, the 20 years in the legislature and 35 years in business. The real world, I say real world, the real world where people live, where people are, knowing what government does, seeing what happens to them, seeing it, living it daily, complaints that people have. Now shifting gears over to the law side, the Oregon legislature, dealing with bills and things of that kind. It gives you a perspective. It gives you also not only perspective, but it gives you the skill to make decisions. You got to make decisions. You can't just kind of futz around. And it's still going back to those that are worried about their job, where's the politics of it, which way's the wind blowing. If that's how you make your decisions. It's terrible to live that way. I say, okay, what's right? What's the right thing to do? I've gone to the Republican caucus, told them a number of times, I may have said this before, and there may be other duplicates in this conversation I'm having. The most political, if you're talking about sheer politics, raw politics, the most political thing you can do is do what you think is right. It's that simple. It's not complicated. It isn't how many people over here, what the last poll said, all the rest of it. What's the right thing to do? During the course, I know that as a governor, I gave up some of the tools of politics. One of them is that I am not vindictive. If somebody does something that I don't like, I'm not out to get them. I'm not the kind of a person, don't get mad, get even. I'm not that kind of person. Well, that would then mean that you're not a threat to somebody. I'm going to go out and campaign against you, or I will veto your bill, or those kinds of things. How about that kind of person? And if you're not, you do give up some tools. I'm watching Clinton. What's he going to trade for to get his medical? What did he trade for to get the tax bill passed? That's an awful way to do business. That's an awful thing to do. It's terrible. It happens all the time. But this is terrible. This isn't Clark wants something and Vic wants something. We're talking, it isn't you and me. It's all those people out there. That's unfortunate. I don't know how you change it. I just have to give my opinion as to how government should operate. That sounds naive, but it's not naive. It's important for the health of this country that we have people to face their responsibility in that fashion. Unfortunately, it doesn't happen. So I get, you know, I gave up some things. I don't trade. And you give up some things. But still, you know, even if I know that, and I know it, you know, I've been around long enough to know all these things, I'm not going to change. So maybe some things that I could have had, I didn't get. That's the way she goes. It wasn't worth it to me. And I don't think government should operate that way. And so I never did.
Do you recall major junctures where you knew you were giving something up at that point, or knew you were making crossing some roads?
It would happen, you know, oftentimes, or cases. I mean, I didn't pay attention to them because I wasn't out there doing any bartering. I didn't know where I went or lost. Mm-hmm. I just know because I've been in the process long enough that you lose something in the process. Mm-hmm. I just happen to know that. Where it happened or how it happened, no, I don't know. I don't keep track of those kinds of things. But anyway, I think in that context, you know, we're in an area that sounds awful self-serving, but I think I need to do that. I'm not going to write the history for Nicotia. I know that. All I can do is point someone who's ever going to look at me. I'll say, okay, as you're looking at Nicotia, look at this. Now, part of this is what I just said. Mm-hmm. Who's Nicotia? Who really is Nicotia? Not somebody's idea of who Nicotia is. You know, they would apply, well, everybody trades, you know. Everybody does that. Everybody is a don't get mad, get even. You know, that's a normal politics. Look at it, Mr. Historian or Mrs. Historian, whoever you are. That's a Nicotia now talking. This is who I am, and that's the way I am. And I think I don't jump at something. I think it out. Do the best job I know how. Get good advice. So, some of the things I want to point to, I made a list of. You know, a lot of good things happen. What I most often hear that, you know, Vic kept the state on an even keel during the recession. And I'm proud of that. I really am. I don't know who else could have done that any better. And not only in the context of whatever, I believe, incidentally, that governors should lead, I'm talking internally. You've got to tell a government where you want to go. But the execution has to be upon the shoulders of really knowledgeable people. Mm-hmm. And I had very good people. The Goldschmidt did a terrible disservice to the people that worked for the state government and the people in the state of Oregon when he was talking about dry rot. That's a terrible thing to say. These are very good, very hardworking people, very knowledgeable people. And because of them, we were able to go through all these times together and get it evened out. Mm-hmm. But there are other things that we could do. Some of what I'm going to tell you is just sort of taken for granted. You know, that's the way we do things. One of the early things that I did was this econometric modeling or forecasting, and to do that on a quarterly basis. And I did mention to you once before, we had a single economist who would occasionally, maybe annually, give us a forecast. A pretty sloppy way of doing business. The econometric model is actually some software that we finally, we did have some errors in it, but we made a major change so it fits Oregon laws, Oregon tax laws, Oregon history of employment, Oregon, you know, all of the things that go into the software. It's been in operation now, gosh, it's be probably 10, 12 years, maybe more than that. No, it is more than that. About 12 years, I suppose. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, fully in operation. Now, we didn't know at the time. We just thought this is a good way to do this. We didn't know at the time it was absolutely essential Mm-hmm. Because when we got into the recession, you really had to keep on top. We couldn't wait for a year to get a forecast, because by that time we'd already spent a lot of money that we needed to save.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were able to deal with the budgets, the budget process, what the income was going to be. We could track it. We could come up with quarterly estimates. But then I added an economic advisory committee. So rather than depending solely on the machine, we had some very bright people that are economists who would be advisory.
Mm-hmm.
And then we got a really good picture of what was going on. That's going on today. One would think it's going on forever. That started in my administration. That's now a permanent thing that's a long-range benefit for the state of Oregon. The Northwest Planning Council, Northwest Energy Planning. I described that to you, but I want to recount it, that I believe that was important. I described our Northwest area, which is Oregon, Washington, Idaho, and Western Montana, as a single lake of
mm-hmm.
energy.
Mm-hmm.
And the lake doesn't go rise and fall according to our boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
The whole lake rises and falls. But at that point in time, I asked Lee Johnson, who was then my chief of staff, I said, start doing a little shuttling. So he went to see Schwinden, he went to see Evans, he went to see then Dixie, and kept kind of going around until we came to a consensus that how a bill should be framed. It was at my insistence that each state have equal representation.
Mm-hmm.
The state of Washington, we were going to have this council. The state of Washington said, we have the largest population. I don't know, probably Western Montana have the smallest amount. And so, you know, kind of proportional. No, I said, in order to keep us going and do it correctly, each state had to have equal representation. I also said, this matter of fishery, knowing, having been a Sea Scout, having been on the river, being a fisherman, I knew the dams had a lot to do with the lack of fishery. And so the fish conservation, that's also part of it.
Mm-hmm.
I put into the bill. Then we had to work it through Congress.
Mm-hmm.
And once we agreed, that is, four governors agreed, it gave it a lot of impetus, and now, of course, we know we have it. And I don't think people say, gee, when did it start? But it started with my administration. And it's going now. One of the great things that I started, I was just beginning, we talked about it earlier, and that's the Permanent Courage legislation.
Mm-hmm. The protection.
Protection of the Permanent Courage. And that's even been in my address to the legislature, but I persisted. I mean, from day one. Friends of the Gorge didn't exist when I started. Those grabbed a hold and said, this is mine. That's all right, you know, I have no objection, as long as we got the job done. However, sometimes it got to be very difficult. I remember specifically talking with Nancy Russell, a determined friend of the Gorge. And I said to her, although I don't think she ever believed me, Nancy, if you keep going like you're going, we're not going to have a bill at all. I like Nancy.
Mm-hmm.
Not picking on her, but you know, sometimes in over enthusiasm and you're making for demands way out of your reach, and you just can't budge people that far. That I wanted something that was going to do the job that was necessary to be done, but I meant it. If she was going to continue doing what she was doing, we weren't going to have a bill at all. Well, we got some. The first major step was an agreement with Governor Spellman.
Mm-hmm.
We needed to have that. Then we now have the delegations from both Oregon and Washington. The two governors agree, and we move forward on that. Oregon had a Columbia River Gorge Commission, as did Washington. Oregon's a little more active than Washington, but they weren't working in concert with one another. Were independent groups. They would meet and discuss and try to coordinate. But it wasn't much teeth that really was not their fault. They just wasn't any teeth for them to do anything. All the kinds of things that are necessary. Now, I can't take sole credit. Nancy Russell certainly, with her advocacy. Mark Catfield, as I said earlier, a major player in this. But as I also said earlier, that would not be law today had I not called Jim Baker and asked him not to have President Reagan veto. He was going to veto the bill. And the specific words were, Jim, I haven't asked you for anything. And he said, yeah, we're not. I said, Jim, this is, I want this. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I can claim major credit for the courts to initiate it, to start it, to push it, to get Spellman behind it. So we got it going, we got the other players in, and then at the very end, keep it from being vetoed. Oregon Food Share. That all came about by Congress. I really believe made a terrible mistake. And they were talking about when can you get food stamps and what is counted as income. And they changed their formula. I like the overkill. And so we began to get complaints in our office about the fact that people were getting hungry. And I said to then Jackie Winters, who was my ombudsman, I said, Jackie, we can't wait for Congress to correct this. We got to do something right away. Out of that came Oregon Food Share. That name doesn't exist right now. Mm-hmm. It's now coordinated with others. I forgot what it's called, but Oregon Food Share is a well-known name. And Oregon became the very first state in the nation that was collecting, warehousing, and distributing food. That exists today. You know, you say, what would have happened had we not done that? Mm-hmm. Well, I think people would have been vetted in, say, in metropolitan areas. And yet I saw it at work in Prineville. Hmm. I've seen it at work in Condon. And, you know, people get hungry out there, too, not just in the city of Portland. But the fact is that we began that. That began in our office. That exists today. The Shoes River Purchase is one of the great. It was a happening. You know, we use that word as a happening. It really was. Sportsman groups are pretty diverse. Some have their own particular interests. Some are interested in bass and sturgeon. Some are interested in trout and salmon. And some are interested in upland birds and. You know, it's just they're really diverse bunch, guides, and really for the first time everybody was pulling together. It all came about, a fellow came to my office and he said, he knew I was interested in the shoots, and hey, this piece of property is going to become available. Why don't a bunch of us get together and buy it, and we'll have our own little chunk.
How large a tract of land is it?
9,000 acres, or over 18 miles of the Shoot River. And then I got Dave Talbot on it. We began doing the negotiation, but we need to raise the money. And it was a marvelous thing. It was so exciting to see this happen. It really was exciting. Everybody thought this was the neatest thing in the world, and sportsman groups of all kinds, companies helping us, and it was great. Mm. Got the money and bought it, and the real significance of that is that you cannot fish from a boat onto the chutes. Mm. And that incidentally is a matter of conservation of the species on the chutes. That's why it's such a great river. And so in order to fish onto the chutes, you have to tie up the boat and fish from shore. Well, if it's in private ownership, you know, the river is public, there's no question about that.
Right.
But you can't go ashore on private land and fish. Mm-hmm. Well, now it's all in public ownership. You can, you know, all that whole stretch, you can get off the boat anywhere that's public. it was a wonderful thing for me. I mean, I was just so excited and seeing all this energy, and mm-hmm. it was a good cause, and we acquired that.